Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to the Psychic Hour. Today we are talking about, what are we talking about, Neil?
We'll figure it out.
It's a hodgepodge. And in addition to our conversation, we are taking calls for readings on the air, as always. 914-338-0164 is the call-in number. And callers, please do press 1 to signify that you would like a reading so we know to take your call. Again, that's 914-338-0164. We are inviting all our callers and listeners to join us here on Blog Talk Radio and on Facebook and on Twitter. Those accounts are linked here on Blog Talk Radio. And 562-596-7818 is the number for further conversation. Okay, so.
Well, there's always, you know, we always have this wide range of topics we can choose from. Sometimes when we do have a topic, we don't even get to it because of the callers. Right now, it's a little bit shy of callers. So, you know, the whole phenomena of what's erupted in at least the last 5 years is an explosion of psychic readers.
Yeah, that's all I'll say.
I've often said this before, when I was a kid and a little boy and started to develop my psychic abilities, there was no access to, first of all, internet or computers. There were no TV shows. It was basic 5, 6, 7 channels. Occasionally you might get a psychic on a radio show, a talk show, but it was few and far between. Sylvia Brown or Dixon, Gene Dixon might appear on Johnny Carson, make some predictions. And there were sometimes psychics that would come on and amaze the audience because they would know things. But there was not this stampede, this whole outburst of the current readers that we have today. Back when I was a little boy, the only readers that I knew of were the gypsies, and sometimes you went into the districts where there are a lot of Mexican-American readers that would read your palmistries. Occasionally you would see something here and there. But there wasn't an outburst. There are a few books. I remember when I was a boy, I walked into a psychic bookstore.
God bless you.
And thank you. And there were, you know, it was just a rinky-dink bookstore with some occult and metaphysical books in it. And you really didn't see what you have today. Now, we were cruising the internet last night.
Cruising the internet.
Cruising
with our top down. We were.
Everyone's a psychic.
Everyone's a psychic.
And some of the so-called psychics, they get your birth date or something, and then they
read out of a book.
They read out of the birth date book, and they talk about, well, you know, you're the year of the dragon, and you're very... You have a bubbly personality, and you're very giving, and they have these generalizations that confidentially ascribe to myself, because I don't think being a psychic reader is a general practice.
Well,
it's not a, you don't generalize. Even in numerology, you don't generalize. You get a master number. Oh, you're a two. Oh, do you know, do you like people? Do you know you like music? In fact, you're going to be a fireman. And the guy goes, what?
Well, when giving a psychic reading, hopefully the information that one is getting is so much beyond a personality profile, you know, of likes and dislikes and traits. I mean, that's extremely shallow considering all the past lives we've had and the content of our soul and our lives on the astral plane. Summing someone up with a personality profile is just falls woefully short of anything that's complete.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think there are great psychics out there, and new psychics, and psychics who are gifted. I think there are psychics out there.
Maybe you can give me some of their names after the show.
Well,
I don't know.
I said I think there are those out there.
Right, you don't know who they are.
I mean, I don't really. We briefly went through the, listened to some of the shows, and, you know, I wasn't that impressed. But nonetheless, you know, some of these other psychics, I don't know how much trickery is involved or how much information is involved, like the Hollywood medium and.
Oh, like John Edwards or whatever. Well, I think he's gifted, probably to a point, but it's, you know, being psychic versus connecting with spirits and guides and being psychic, or what are all the layers? I mean, if someone's truly psychic, then every aspect of psychic energy is.
Well, a lot of the popular ones now will bring somebody over from the other side. And they connect you with somebody from the other side. That seems to be the popular TV variety. There are some psychics that work with the police department, and they get their shows, and they talk about that.
But you can communicate. One can communicate with lower entities. I remember listening, actually. We listened, because we will periodically listen to radio shows with psychics. And there was a woman that we were listening to, and she was, I mean, her delivery, she was charismatic. I would say she was charismatic, and the way she presented information, I think there was some accuracies to her, but I think she was also connecting with maybe lower spirits. Not to say that she wasn't in the best, her intentions weren't good, because I think they were, and there was intention to help. But this woman was, I shortly after we listened to the program, I found out she had just died. So, and she was fairly young, like maybe 50 years old. So when you're doing this kind of work and you're filtering people's energy and you don't know exactly how to clear yourself of the energy, then sometimes you can succumb to.
Yeah, a lot of psychics.
And she was talented. I was probably more impressed than you, Neil, but I mean, she had a gift, and she had a gift for speaking, definitely.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
I'm there's this gift of psychics. I've worked on panels, and I was impressed with some of the people I've worked with. So we're not saying that there aren't gifted psychics out there, and a lot of them. We're just stating that there's an explosion of psychic readers, and of all varieties, there's just an explosion in everyone. We know of one individual that was very new to the topic of psychic phenomena, and they would call our show and just ask, well, you know, when am I going to get out of my mess? Now they're doing a show.
Reading,
they're
guesting on readings.
Later,
well, it's maybe more,
shows.
Less than,
I mean,
3 months, more than 3 months. But, well,
I
that's
know,
funny.
That's
and it, the funny thing about, I have to add, that the show that we listened to, I knew every caller that called. And so it was kind of comical to me that, you know, someone who had been very desperate for help was then suddenly guiding people that, you know,
yeah,
he was in the ranks of the callers that he was helping. So rather surprising. And
there's unfortunately there isn't a, I mean, you can get credentials for of some sort from some metaphysical school, but psychic readers are never going to be legitimately recognized. There is no license per se But you can be licensed to be a numerologist or graphologist.
Or a Reiki master or
Reiki
whatever.
Master. You can get those certificates.
I mean, it's not a license, really. It's a certificate, but it doesn't have any, academic weight or value, really.
No.
I mean, it's not like being a licensed esthetician or
lawyer, or whatever. If people make the effort to go beyond just calling themselves something, and they go to a school and they learn and they put some effort into it and they study, I think there's merit in that. And I think insofar that this isn't a legitimate science or profession, if you want to call it that. I mean, it's a legitimate
profession, but science, I guess, would be the more
medically legitimate. There is some consideration and merit to people who strive to perfect their abilities and go into some depth and length to study.
Well, I
and,
think that's
and get
the thing.
Some kind of title.
I think the surprising thing for both of us last night was that, jumping from being someone seeking help and asking the advice of psychics and then dispensing advice, where's the learning curve? I mean, really, to become a great psychic or even a proficient psychic, you've really got to dedicate yourself to learning your craft. And it doesn't happen in a year. I mean, it really does. I mean, I can attest to that myself. We've been actively involved in developing psychic energy on my behalf for 6+ years together, aside from our previous relationship where I was, where it was a professional relationship beyond the personal relationship. And it takes time, just like any other.
Well,
any
it takes
other
time,
pursuit.
And I don't know, because my grandfather decided to introduce me to psychic energy. I don't know what he saw something in me, and I had a vast interest in it anyways. And I was just about 5-6 years old. And because from that point, I studied it every day. I mean, the older I got, the more advanced I got in my studies and my readings, and oh my God, it's just in my blood. I wouldn't know what else to do. It's like the son and his father's the fisherman, and from the age of 7 or 8, he's on the fishing boat, and he's just learned to be a fisherman, and he does his craft, efficiently, silently, no boasting, nothing like that, and he's good at it. And, that's all I can say about myself. I took it upon myself to read, and do thousands of readings.
But you were effectively immersed in this lifestyle from a young age.
I mean,
it wasn't like, something you decided to pick up. And, it was a life energy, a soul energy for you to do that.
It was a soul energy. And my grandfather was a bit of a wizard. He was a psychic, and he really did some fantastic things with me, being his grandson, where the whole theme of our activity was psychic energy. So I was fortunate to go there. But, he didn't teach me how to see ghosts. He taught me how to work with ghosts and spirits and how to...
Right, that was a natural... That was already...
That was already...
That was already an ability you had.
Yeah.
That was,
And he was a vastly learned man, and so he started to teach me at 5 about numerology and what the numbers meant. And when I look back, his theories and his teaching were somewhat limited, but they were very strong for the time. And he believed in reincarnation and karma and all that, but he didn't exactly equate it to the numbers. He just talked about
right, so you,
3 is this, 4 is this. This is how you derive, and he would give a general impression about what the numbers meant. But he didn't go into. He couldn't write a book. There was no specific things that he was teaching.
So he
me.
Provided a basis for you to develop your own theories.
Yeah,
numerology.
Yeah. He might have read 1 or 2 books or something.
And I'm certain that the theories that you developed and were now writing about in our book were not developed, it was many, many years of applied practice with people and learning that, refined your theory.
My theory.
That didn't happen overnight, you know, not in a year after he taught you about numbers. Did you develop theory?
I developed theories. He didn't have so-called theories, but I have to credit him for introducing me to the science of numbers.
But what I'm saying is you don't learn overnight. I mean, you don't jump from point A to point Z and start conducting reading.
No, it was at least.
Or read a book on numerology and then, you know, think you know everything there is and can help and guide people. You know, I think that it's very, it's nice of people to want to help, but I think really to help people effectively, you've got to learn about what you're helping them with before you
have to learn,
jump into the deep end.
You have to be somewhat gifted, and you have to have, you have to have the energy. You have to, in this lifetime, you have to have the energy. I know even my grandfather would test me. He would take me, back in those days, the L.A. airport, you could just walk right in. There was no security or anything. And he would have me sit down and say to me, okay, now see that person sitting there? Now who do you think they're going to greet? Who's going to come off the airplane? And he started to make me guess or surmise or phantom what is going to happen. And I was accurate. And then he'd take me to the courts. We would sit in the courthouse. And he would say, now who is this guy lying? What's going to happen? So he was, and then back in those days, he'd take me, I guess it was saloons, because I remember him putting me up on the banister.
You mean on the bar?
Bar, yeah. And he would kind of show me off. I remember him talking about me. And then he once asked me to say something about the bartender. He was his big fat guy, and back in those days he had a bow tie and a white shirt, big chubby guy. I still remember this. And he said, say something about him. And I told him about his wife and his kids. And I remember everybody laughing and drinking, and my grandfather, you know, kind of looking like he's such a polished grandfather. He's got this little kid that he's showing off. I mean, you know, and so there was a lot of whimsical things. He took me around and taught me how to listen to the trees talking. He would talk to trees.
Didn't he pull money out of the sky once?
He did all kinds of stuff.
Magic.
Yeah. He wasn't a magician.
No,
but he could,
working with energy, he was able to produce physical results from an energy field
that's
beyond physicality.
He really could. He really was. And he had ghost friends and spirit friends that he introduced me to that I got to know in his house. So, you know, I mean, from that, and then he forced me to read books. And if I got something wrong, what he would do, he had a newspaper, he'd roll it up and hit me on the head. He was a little strict. So I was afraid of getting things wrong. He would say, you don't guess. And if you're guessing, I'm going to hit you on the head. You know, you don't guess. So there was room for evaluation, and he would allow that. But guessing, no. I got hit on the head with a newspaper and a Sunday paper. It wasn't a weekly paper.
Much more.
He had it rolled up. So
painful to be hit with the Sunday paper.
Yeah.
Then.
And back in those days, that wasn't abusive. That was necessary. You know, you did that.
Well,
but he
you
was
do that
not
with
abusive.
Me. I mean,
yeah,
now.
I do that with you now. So. But now we use a hickory stick.
We're all a bunch.
So, you know, I think it's great that there's this, what we call this explosion of psychics and readers and mediums and clairvoyance. I think it's great, but, you know, you have to use certain discretion.
Discretion, exactly the word I was thinking of, so you must be pulling that out of my brain. You have to use discretion.
You really do.
Exactly.
You really do. I'm not proud of the fact that I'm not always right, but I know my territory. I know,
even as someone who is a protege or apprentice, me, and getting psychic vibrations or feeling territory with people on the radio, where I'm able to practice, which is great. And being wrong, it's, you know, I'm very afraid of being wrong. Often I don't speak up because I'm afraid of being wrong. And oftentimes I'm right, but being wrong is, especially when you're in a process of development, is scary. It's scary, but refining your sense of accuracy is important, and going out there into the world and giving readings. If you're, I would say, I don't know, 40% or 30% accurate and 70% accurate, I would say that's probably not the time to go out into the world and start your readings, you know?
Oh, well, you know, it depends. If you're giving just sort of gay, fancy readings, you know, you're going to meet this guy or something, that's one thing. But if you're guiding, like let's look at Rasputin or the Nancy Reagan, the psychic she followed. I forget her name. It's a female psychic.
Wasn't it Jean Dixon she followed into?
I can't remember.
An astrologer?
It might have been.
Not a psychic.
I don't
know
if it was Jean. I'm not sure. But, and, you know, more or less, she didn't make decisions unless she consulted her psychic, and she would tell Ronnie about it, and they gave a lot of credit to their psychic. And there are psychics, and Russia's famous.
I'm incorrect.
Yeah,
I'm
wrong. Not Jean Dixon.
It's Joan Quigley. Joan Quigley.
Yeah, I remember it was.
She died, actually, in 2014. Interesting.
Oh, she passed away. Well, she must have been in her 80s. That, you know, we were talking about how psychics take on so much energy that they don't, a lot of psychics don't live that long. But.
Yeah, she was 80.
She died by 80, yeah. The idea of when I'm often asked, you know, I'm going to take this plane flight. Will it be okay? I'm driving to this place.
Right.
Will it be in? I mean, that gets a little scary and concerning.
Yeah, because then you're really starting to, I mean, what if you say yes and the plane crashes?
Advise
someone to continue a relationship and they're later, you know, their children are harmed by this person or whatever it may be. I mean, you have to be very, very careful when guiding people in their lives. I mean, if you're generalizing, we hear a lot of, when we're listening to shows, oh, you know, this is a time of change for you. You know, this is a time of gratitude. You're really making changes and being, and, you know, applying thanks to everything that you're doing is really going to be transformative, blah, 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 blah. I mean, that is not a psychic reading. It's not a psychic reading.
No, I mean, you can have generalized readings, and it's still considered entertainment. Entertainment. That's what it's considered, entertainment. But, you know, as far as the heading of entertainment goes, I've had people in government, in the police force, in secret service, and movie stars and all this kind of stuff who have asked me for advice or direction or themes of the future. And these include people who have won Academy Awards and people who are not that far from the White House, in fact, have been in the White House, work in the White House. So you get to a place where, oh, my God, what is my career? What has one's career led them to, and who did they speak to? I'm not saying that I'm a great psychic. I don't have a TV. Yeah. We don't have this fabulous TV show on A&E or anything. But, you know, we're humble in spirit. And we do our job, and that amounts to the aspect of for instance, in numerology. Are you really? We're not going to say too much because we're saving this for a book we're working on. That's right now over 1,000 pages of notes, notes alone. Still working on it. A lot of work to do.
Right.
We work on it every day.
You know, those notes are copyrighted.
As this show is. But the idea of fulfilling your energy and working in a way to where you kind of, you try to get out of your ego. And I know we all find ourselves wrapped up in our ego. Even what we're discussing today has a lot to do with our ego, at least my ego. And you're discussing things too. But I'm more guilty of talking out of my ego today
than
anybody.
Me. I would say so. Not that that's bad, but I mean, you know, yeah.
I
but I mean, you're talking about a lifelong pursuit that you've had. And so obviously you would have to speak from an ego place, not an egotistical place,
degree,
but about your personal experience.
To some degree. Or, I mean, I would hope that that the people I've done readings for have will express it, that I offer it's a service. It's helping. So you pray to God that what you're doing is helping your fellow human beings and being some service to them. Our radio show, which we pay for to be on the air, is of service to people, where we supply readings and with no strings attached, nothing. And we're here just to help. And I know that in our brain, in our mind here, in our collective brain, if we're hot on a topic and we get a call, we take that caller. Our callers always come first. I know that in my past, when I've worked on certain books, fiction, things like that, if someone called for a reading, I dropped whatever I was doing.
Oh, yeah. Well, even today when we're working on our book, which is not an ego pursuit. I mean, the book is not, you know, it's not like it's a creative writing or, a novel that we're working on. This is a service for other people. But even when we're working on that book, we get a call. And often it happens. We stop working and take the call. So,
and unfortunately, even now we're boasting about how great we are in terms of
we are so selfless. God, aren't we great?
Wow, you can't get away from it. We were talking about, what is it to be truly spiritual? I mean, what is to be truly in spirit? We were talking about that. Do you go to if you really, really want to get away from the world, you just want to be spiritual. And we talk about people who go to monasteries.
Right, and we were talking about going to a monastery may not be necessarily totally actualizing spirit, because if you separate too much from the world, then you can't, you're not serving, your fellow man.
Yeah, you get into that element where if you actually are of spirit nature, priests, monks, nuns, certain religion, just religious, devout human beings that want to be extensively and exclusively devoting themselves to God or to spirit. What happens is you can stumble and get lost in the idea that you're not connecting anymore to your fellow human being.
Right, or fellow planets. I mean, animals, the environment, whatever is of the planet that needs assistance. You know, isolating yourself like that is not always.
And that can even be ego, because just sitting there, your ego is taking you directly to God or directly to the Supreme Being, and all you do is devoutly worship and do your thing. We went to Capistrano, the mission at Capistrano.
Oh, San Juan Capistrano.
And how they had this, the monks had to sleep on these wired beds and pray, and everything was scheduled by the hour. I mean, and their whole life was just, I mean, they probably talked, obviously they talked amongst themselves, but they lived in the monastery, and their life was directly devoted to God. Well,
I mean, then you talk about the abuses in the church and Junipero Serra, who was abusive to the indigenous people, and it's terrible. But certainly they were monks that did help and were dedicated to a higher path. But we do have a caller here, so we are going to divert from our topic for a moment. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome. What's your name?
This is Diane.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, I was calling because I'm not sure if you guys work much with animal spirits or not, or just have any message you could help me with. I had a dog that I loved dearly for 10 years die just a couple days ago, and
I'm just wondering
any guidance you could give me. I'm sorry.
So sorry to hear that.
Oh, thank you.
It's really always the toughest, I think, to lose a pet.
Yeah.
I mean,
horrible.
Because the love is so pure.
Such a pain. I did have kind of an impression that he might not be around much longer, even though he seemed to be doing pretty well. So I made good use of the time. And and, you know, tried to make that extra connection, you know, to send him off.
Let's get your birth date, first of all.
Certainly. It is March 24th, 1962.
So I'm not going to even ask her much. 5/9/19. Okay, so.
Well, you know,
first
of all, to answer your question, do we deal with animal spirits? Most definitely. In fact, sometimes I enjoy working with animal spirits more than I do human spirits. I mean, I love animals.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're vegetarian. Okay. We don't even eat. I mean, I was taught, you know, you don't need an animal if you want to talk to an animal. So I've been a vegetarian since the age of about 6 or 7. Didn't eat any animals. And so so now we're talking about your dog. First of all, the bond between an animal and their pet, I don't even care if it's a goldfish, is very strong. And that animal gets to know the person that's taking care of them. They even say that jumping spiders.
I was going to mention the spider we've had outside, and he's, total personality.
Total personality, and jumping spiders make really neat little pets. They get to know you. They recognize you. So anyways, the bond you had with your dog, there's some obvious things. One, it was sacred. You taking care of your dog and being with your dog, and I'm talking not just generally, I'm talking specifically about you, and loving your dog and patting him and watching TV with him and blah, 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 and taking him for walks. This is a great bond because this goes all the way back to the first time a caveman threw a piece of meat to a dog, to a wolf, and a bond started. So you have this great bond with this dog. And I don't know why, but I'm getting the number 14. Now, I don't know what 14 is yet. I don't know if the dog was 14. I'm not sure what 14 means at this moment, unless you know and you can tell me. But if you don't, then we can keep moving on.
No, I can't think of anything right now.
Okay.
Should we get the dog's age? Do you want to wait?
I don't know.
Well, I did think of one thing. In 2014, I brought home another dog a year after a previous dog had died. And so that's when the deceased dog, Toby, became bonded with this other dog that's still with me. It was 2014.
That's it, Diane. I won't.
Take credit
I don't want to stretch something to say, I think I'll take credit for it. I think that's it. Because I was getting 14. So, I mean, does the dog know the number? I don't know. Horses sometimes do things with numbers. It's not so much that the dog knows the number, but the dog sends a vibration. And when that vibration hits me, at least in my experience, I transform it into an English language for myself. So the vibration of 14, I believe, came from Toby.
Okay.
And I'm only saying Toby because you said the name. Okay. When I think of Toby, I think of Toby Tyler in the circus. But a lot of people don't know about Toby Tyler. But anyways, at that point, Toby was elated, was happy.
Okay.
I don't know, when you brought that dog in, Toby was happy. I know of a woman who brought a cat into her world for another cat, and that cat was driven crazy by this new cat. And I think it wasn't the best idea, but it still, you know, life goes on. And so in your case, when you brought your other dog in, Toby was happy. Toby loved this dog. I think Toby was a gentle dog.
Very gentle, yes.
Yeah, like, you know, a butterfly would land on his nose and he'd look at it with crossed eyes. I think he was a gentle dog.
Yeah.
And so the ease through which the Toby moved to the other side was not bad. You know, there's always some pain. and that kind of thing. But then the body starts to relax. And animals, what they do is they go and animals go into a special instinctual place to where they can release themselves from the pain. Sometimes they're panting, they're moaning. But animals have a distinct instinctual seed through which they can move. And so that zone came. Also, there seemed to be two balls, B-A-L-L-S, that were significant. One looked like a yellow ball or a blue ball, but were significant. I don't know if you can validate that.
I'm not sure if he had a favorite ball. The previous dog I'd had had some balls. In fact, the other dog liked the squeak toys, and Toby hated the squeaker, and so within 24 hours, he would rip the squeaker out of it because he didn't want to hear it.
So it was the previous dog that is deceased, that dog that liked the balls, or the one you have currently?
The previous dog that was already deceased, and Toby would always rip the ball out. So when I got the new dog in 2014, I didn't get any squeaker toys. There were some balls. They just weren't squeaker toys because I knew Toby did not like them.
Yeah, that's probably the vibrational transference of information that's going on. And let me ask you something. When there were firecrackers or sirens, did Toby get scared? Did he get bloated? Did he drink?
He was an alcoholic.
Did he go to AA, you know, right around the 4th of July?
He would get a little concerned about the loud noises. I noticed that only because sometimes I'd have him in the car and I'd be going somewhere and I had the dogs with me. But because of that, I did not normally let him outside for very long around the 4th of July. I was always out with him. But I don't know if he was super skittish about it, but I did try and keep him away from that.
Now, Diane, were there any children or a husband or somebody that had like a pitching, you know, when you throw the ball into the net and it bounces back? Was there anything with a net in the backyard anywhere?
I can't see that right now in his history, No.
I don't know. Was there any baseball fan in your family? No?
Not that I can think of.
Well, I don't know why I'm seeing a net. I don't know what that is. And I don't want to sit here after we had our discussion about guessing. So I don't know what this net is. But there seems to be something to do. I don't know. The dog is sending vibration. And I think we do have some link going on. If this is helping you to help answer your question.
She can ask more if she wants to ask a more specific question
I was hoping Toby was okay because I was out for a little while. And when I got home, he could not get out of his kennel. I had to pull him out. And I think then he was still a little bit aware, but I think he was pretty much brain dead. And then he died shortly after that. He stopped breathing completely. But I guess I was wondering if he was okay and just, I was really hoping that he might be coming back to me sometime as another dog.
Did the kennel have a net screen, but it was metal?
Yes, there's a metal screen around the front on the door.
That's the net.
That's what I'm looking at.
Okay.
That's it. That, I think, is the image. Listen, when, you know, usually unless we have the mad dog from hell, from, you know, the omen, we're not going to look at animals suffering when they go over. What happens is that they don't have a soul. They're not humans. They don't have a soul. They have a spirit.
Spirit.
So they go into the spirit realm, and a lot of them linger around their, I hate the word masters. It sounds so horrible, but they linger around the people that took care of them. And as far as they know, they're not dead. They don't need to be fed anymore. They're just around you. And the best you can do is, you know, say hello to them, everyone. They know you. They don't know they're dead. And they just think they're hanging around you and everything's hunky-dory. They don't have a need to eat or go to the bathroom or go for a walk. They're just in the energy around you. Now, some actually transcend and go into a different astral realm. But for the most part, when there's, and I'll tell you something else, Diane, that when a person dies, there are reports of animals sitting on the graves.
Mm-hmm.
There's a link, and the bond between animals and humans is phenomenal. So I believe that Toby, in your case, his, at least my opinion, Toby is around you. Toby's fine. Toby feels like he's not even dead. He's just around you. And the, and now the conference that he has with you is just your vibration.
Can we ask Diane what kind of dog this was?
He was a beagle.
He was a beagle. Beagles are so cute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, because I was seeing some brown in the dog, and I didn't.
He was brown and white, probably.
Yeah, he was mostly brown with some white and black.
Yeah, I saw a lot of brown in, around the dog. So, and beagles are
What's the word I'm thinking? I don't know.
What, you know, they howl.
Yeah, actually, he did not bay. He was kind of nicknamed the quiet man because he did not make a lot of those noises that beagles often do. He was very, very quiet. Unless he saw something that upset him, he would bark.
No, I know. Because I said oftentimes beagles do, but I was about to say that this beagle, like I said, a butterfly could land on his nose and he would just look at. He was a gentle, gentle dog. And I don't know, was there anything with the blood, Toby's blood, something about the blood? I don't know.
Yeah, actually, after I had to pull him out of his kennel, he was still breathing, and he coughed up some blood shortly before he died.
Yeah. Well, that you see, Toby wasn't totally conscious, but Toby is trying to, I guess the vibrational imagery that I'm getting is I saw blood. And you don't usually see blood. And it's not that Toby wants to say, hey, let's get morbid. I just think that Toby's trying to send a message because Toby knows what blood is. All animals,
mm-hmm.
they lick it. They lick their wounds. They know the taste of blood. I think that to answer your question, we're sorry to hear that. How old was Toby?
He was 12, just short of his 13th birthday in a couple months.
Hmm. Well, that's good for a beagle. That's a good long life for a beagle. And like I said, at the year 2014, Toby wants to thank you for that, the things that went on in that year.
Okay, sure.
Okay, Diane, hopefully that helped you a little bit.
It does. I thank you both for your time and your help.
Okay. Take care.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, I had a dog for 17 years. And when that dog died, I said, that's it. I can't deal with the loss. Now we've got a cat.
Who showed up in the was living in the base of the olive tree on our property. She's about, well, the vet said about 4 years old. We thought she was a little younger, three, but we did not plan to happen. I've lost pets, dogs and cats and,
it's
horrible.
I don't like the loss and I should be able to handle things like that, but an animal can't stand the loss. But, you know, my dog talked English.
She's talked, and now I'm
teaching and she's talking.
She talks.
She talks. She says
out.
The word open, out. I mean, she talks. And she complains a lot of times.
I mean,
but
most of the
talk.
Time it's a cat sound, but it's developed in other instances into a word, a human word.
Yeah,
English.
She's like turning one of those movies with the animated mouth on the live animal and they talk. She's starting
she's
to
really
do that.
She's really a smart cat.
Very smart. Loves TV.
Well, like we watch
shows.
Show her, she watches cat videos, and she's now apparently I must have purchased my iPad for her because she's completely taken over it. But anyway,
so when we get into the idea of animal spirits, I mean, we You know, it's fun because we've got birds that know us, that come by and talk to us, wild birds. And,
squirrels. Lizards. The lizards ringing the doorbell.
Yeah, we had a lizard that would ring our doorbell.
Well, we've had a few lizards that would ring the doorbell. And we don't have a physical doorbell. The doorbell mechanism is within the home, but the doorbell is not on the outside of the house anymore.
No.
And the doorbell would just ring.
And
we go outside and the lizard would be there.
Looking at us, nodding his head. Animals are fascinating. I mean, they're so magical. So whether it's a dog, a cat, lizards, rabbits, snakes, they're all fascinating.
Bees, we have hummingbirds.
All,
the hummingbirds, too,
yeah,
have
hummingbirds.
Been making friends with the cat. Actually, Olive, our cat, is no longer hunting birds or trying to hunt. She's a terrible hunter. But she is making friends with birds, which is
making
kind of unusual for a cat.
A hummingbird comes by right in front of her face, and they have a little talk, the two of them, very calmly. And then you get into the more sophisticated parts of animals where you have people like Diane Fossey and
Jane Goodall
and the people who did the Born Free couple. I mean, there's so many different people. Recently, Coco died. I had the privilege of meeting Coco, the gorilla, and I think her name is Florence. I've had a privilege of meeting her and discussing Coco. This funny story about Coco is when I went and met Coco, she wanted to mate with me, and so she was hitting her rump on the ground, and Florence pulled me into her office and asked me, you know, what are you doing? There was some kind of strange communication going on. I don't know if she probably doesn't listen to the show, but after that, I became a great fan of Coco. But our relationship never went so far. Florence came between us, and so we had...
Francine.
And so it was a love affair that never manifested into anything deeper than that. But it would have been nice had it developed into something more. But anyways, it doesn't matter. We have to let go of the past.
Okay.
So the attitude of animals, I mean, you know, even ants, consider the ant and be wise. We find ants in the house, we put them on our finger. At least I put it on my finger.
I save them too, but I always had a phobia of ants. I did less so now, but I would start crying when an ant was on me. I mean, it's ridiculous. That's how I was when I was younger. For some reason.
Yeah.
Spiders don't do that to me as much as ants. I don't know. I would get extremely upset.
Well, after a bug's life and all this, you know, ants have been given personalities. I know I wrote a novel about an ant. But the idea of ants, they're fascinating creatures. They're fascinating creatures. And they're social creatures, just like bees. We save bees. We love bees. And bees, we've saved bees out of pools and water.
Yeah, and we had a little bee infirmary with honey and, in the house with a, you know, an air vent, a little container with an air vent for the bee and rehabilitated the bees.
Yeah, I really believe that scientists will say you're ridiculous, you're absurd, but I really believe they say, you know, does an insect know you've saved them? Probably not.
Well, on a conscious level in the way that we think as human beings, but there's definitely, I do believe that they some level.
I do too, because the vibrational attitude of when I saved a bee and I'm putting it on my finger and it's looking at me and following my eyes, and I think there's something kind of bizarre that goes on in the unspoken language between human beings and the animals around. I know one test was I was charged, being charged by a grizzly bear. I was up in the mountains, and a grizzly bear actually charged me.
Like how much?
It was 99 cents. And luckily I had a dollar, so I got a penny.
Did he take credit cards? Oh, it was cash. Okay.
No, it was cash.
So he, anyway,
charged me for, you know,
seriously.
I was in his territory, okay. So I didn't realize I was on a toll bridge. But
yeah, you have to have a transponder for it.
Yeah,
fast track.
I was missing the ship. The bear charged you. And, you know, I was told, you know, you don't run, you don't do this. But I stood my ground and I sent a mental message to the grizzly bear that I understood him, that I was a friend. The bear, right when I sent it, the bear stopped and got on his hind legs and waved at me like that grizzly bear in Big Ben, or the movie The Grizzly, the bear. He waved at me and kind of did that thing with his mouth, like he looked like he's retarded. He did like he was talking to me, and then just walked away.
I think animals can perceive those that are kind to animals, though you have animal lovers sometimes get attacked. But I think also, that's due to karma. Sometimes the animal lover in this lifetime may have been someone who was abusive toward animals in a past life. So often you'll have people attacked by sharks or by grizzly bears, and that can be a karmic element, not necessarily representative of what the person's done in the current lifetime.
Yeah, it's fun. I was an avid hiker.
I thought you were going to say. Sure.
No, my God,
no. No, I know, but for some reason the H, and you lingered
the
on
H.
The H. I was like, huh?
Avid hiker, and on my hikes I would encounter tons of coyotes that would look at me and talk a little bit. I once knew a woman who was also a hiker, and she woke up fell asleep in the forest, and deep in the forest. And when she woke up, she was surrounded by coyotes in a circle that made a that was there to protect her during the night. I mean, so coyotes. I encountered a mountain lion on a hike once that just looked at me and blinked his eyes like that friendly blink that cats do. So yeah, I guess because of Diane, our caller today, we got it sidetracked.
Not really though, because we kind of were in an open conversation. I mean, really, there was nothing specific we were talking about. I mean, who knows what will happen on Wednesday, if we'll be blessed with a lot of callers or time to discuss more. We'll see what happens then. But we are back on the air at 9 o'clock on Wednesday, 9 o'clock Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern, and we hope everybody has a terrific weekend. Bye-bye.